Lecture 8 in the Staying Connected lecture cycle. Not a lecture cycle, actually. It's a selected talks and meditations by Rudolf Steiner. How to continue your relationships with those who have died. The overview of Lecture 8. Yeah, Lecture 8 is called The Dead Are Always With Us, given in Nuremberg, February 10th, 1918. In the physical world, our actions seem to have limited consequences. It seems that what we do causes little pleasure or pain around us. The situation is otherwise in the world of the dead. There, everything causes either pleasure or pain. No act is without its echo. On earth there are the four kingdoms of mineral, plant, animal, and human. Among the dead, however, the lowest kingdom is that of the animal. It is the soil upon which the dead live. Therefore, the first task for one who has died is to acquire intimate, exact knowledge of this. This is necessary because in communion with the whole hierarchy of cosmic beings, the dead must prepare for their next physical incarnation. In doing so, they are woven by a self-correcting process into pleasure and pain until eventually both soul and body are ready for the new incarnation. Acquaintance with the human kingdom is more limited because the dead can contact only those with whom they are already linked. Such links can be made only on earth. Other souls whom one has not met on earth pass by, unnoticed. This is one meaning of karma. It also points to the supreme significance of earthly life as the place where we develop connection, love. This has to do with soul life, because this connection refers to the interpenetration of soul lives in such a way that after death one soul can find itself in another. After death, souls are as intimately related as we are with our own bodies on earth. In the spiritual world, souls are either inside or outside other souls. The same is true of their relationships to the beings of the hierarchies, angels, archangels, and so on. It is this interpenetration that makes communication possible. But there are dangers. What is higher life in the spiritual world can easily become a lower impulse when it is within us on earth. Therefore, to communicate with the dead requires a great personal purity, especially because the relationship with the dead is always through the blood or nervous system, for the dead live in the animal realm. Another difficulty lies in the fact that in communication with the dead, the normal process of communication is reversed. On earth, when we speak to another, we know who is speaking. But when we speak to the dead, what we say comes from them. And when they speak, this comes from our own soul. Steiner says, when speaking with the dead, we must adapt ourselves to hear from them what we ourselves say, and to receive from our own soul what they answer. In fact, the dead are always with us, around us, but we do not notice them because of this reversal. We think we have an idea when perhaps it is inspired into us, whispered to us by a loved one who has died. All of us are in constant communication with the dead in this way. To understand this, it is useful to concentrate on the magic moments of waking up and falling asleep. The time of falling asleep is especially favorable for turning to the dead to ask a question. The answer will come in the morning in the evanescent moment of awakening. Before this can happen, however, we must fill our thoughts with feelings. The question must be carried in the heart's current. The dead are always there and present with us, particularly those who died as children. These are especially with us and do not go away. Older people, on the other hand, sometimes go away, because they are drawn swiftly into the spiritual sphere. Therefore, funeral services for young children and old people should be different. These are very important matters that remind us of our communion with the spiritual world. Now the lecture, The Dead Are Always With Us, Nuremberg, February 10th, 1918. Today we will again think of the life that takes its course between death and a new birth, the life that seems so far removed from the human being in the physical world. I will begin by simply narrating what spiritual investigation has found. These things can be understood if sufficient thought is applied to them. Their own power makes them comprehensible to the soul. Those who do not understand them should realize that they have not thought about them deeply enough. These things must be investigated by the methods of spiritual science, but they can be understood by constant study. They will then be confirmed by the facts that life itself confronts us with, provided life is rightly observed. You will have realized from many of the lecture courses that study of the life between death and rebirth, You will have realized from many of the lecture courses that study of the life between death and rebirth is fraught with difficulty. because its connections are so entirely different from those of the life that can be pictured by the organs of the physical body here in the physical world. We therefore have to become familiar with utterly different conceptions. We know that when we enter into relationship with the things in our physical environment, only a small proportion of the beings around us in the physical world react to our deeds, the manifestations of our will, in such a way that we realize our deeds cause pleasure or pain. Reactions of this kind take place in the animal and human kingdoms, but we are justified in thinking that the mineral world, including what is contained in air and water, and essentially the world of plants, are insensitive to what we call pleasure or pain as the result of our deeds. Spiritually considered, of course, the matter is a little different, but that need not concern us at this point. Parenthesis. In the environment of the dead, all this is changed. Conditions in the environment of the so-called dead are such that everything, including what is done by the dead themselves, causes either pleasure or pain. The dead cannot do a single thing. They cannot, if I may speak pictorially, move a single limb without pleasure or pain being caused by what is done. We must try to think our way into these conditions of existence. We must assimilate the thought that life between death and a new birth is so constituted that everything we do awakens an echo in the environment. During the whole period between death and a new birth, we can do nothing, metaphorically speaking, we cannot even move, without causing pleasure or pain in our environment. The mineral kingdom, as we have found it around us on the physical plane, does not exist for the dead, nor does the world of plants. As you can gather from my book, Theosophy, these kingdoms are present for the dead in an entirely different form. They are not present in the spiritual world in the form we are familiar with here, that is, as realms devoid of feeling. The first of the kingdoms familiar to us on the physical plane that has significance for the dead, because it is comparable with what the dead have in their environment, is the animal kingdom. I do not, of course, mean individual animals as we know them on the physical plane, but the whole environment is such that its effects and influences are as if animals were there. The reaction of the environment is such that pleasure or pain proceeds from what is done. On the physical plane, we stand upon mineral soil. The dead, analogously, stand upon a soil, in quotes, they live in an environment that may be compared with animal nature. The dead, therefore, start their lives two kingdoms higher than we do on earth. On earth, we know the animal kingdom only from outside. Between death and a new birth, the first, most outer activity of life consists in acquiring more and more intimate and exact knowledge of the animal world. For it is in this life, between death and a new birth, that we must prepare all those forces that, working in from the cosmos, organize our own body. In the physical world, we know nothing of these forces. Between death and a new birth, we know that our body, down to its smallest particles, is formed out of the cosmos. We ourselves prepare this physical body, bringing together in it the whole of animal nature. We ourselves build our physical body. To make the picture more exact, let us acquaint ourselves with an idea that is rather remote from current mentality. People today know that when a magnetic needle lies with one end pointing toward the north and the other toward the south, this is not caused by the needle itself. The earth as a whole is a cosmic magnet, one pole pointing toward the north and the other toward the south. It would be sheer nonsense to say that the direction is determined by forces contained in the magnetic needle. In the case of a seed or a germinating entity that develops into an animal or a human being, all the sciences and schools of thought deny the factor of cosmic influence. What would be described as nonsense in the case of the magnetic needle is accepted without further thought in the case of an egg forming inside the hen. But when the egg is forming inside the hen, the whole cosmos is, in fact, participating. What happens on Earth merely provides the stimulus for the operation of cosmic forces. Everything that takes shape in the egg is an imprint of cosmic forces, and the hen herself is only a place, an abode, in which the cosmos, the whole world system, is working. It is the same in the case of the human being. This is a thought with which we must become familiar. Between death and a new birth, we work in communion with beings of the higher hierarchies, with a whole system of forces permeating the cosmos. Between death and a new birth, we are not inactive. We are always at work, but in the spiritual realm. The animal kingdom is the first sphere with which we become acquainted. This happens as follows. If we commit some error, we immediately become aware of pain, of suffering in the surroundings. If we do something right, we become aware of pleasure, of joy in the environment. The dead work on and on, calling forth pleasure or pain, until finally their soul nature is such that it can descend and unite with what will live on earth as a physical body. Our soul being could never descend if it had not itself worked at the physical form. It is the animal kingdom, then, that the dead come to know first. Next is the human kingdom. Mineral nature and the plant kingdom are absent. To use a familiar phrase, the dead's acquaintance with the human kingdom is limited. Between death and a new birth, and this begins immediately or soon after death, the dead have contact and can make links with only those human souls, whether still living on earth or in the world beyond, with whom they have already been karmically connected on earth in the last or in an earlier incarnation. Other souls pass by. They do not come within their ken. The dead become aware of the animal realm as a totality, but only the human souls they have had some karmic connection with here on earth come within their purview. And with these, they become more and more closely acquainted. You must not imagine that the number of these is small, for individual human beings have already passed through many lives on earth, and in each life many karmic connections are formed. A web is then spun of these that in the spiritual world extends over all the souls whom the dead have known in life. Only those with whom no acquaintance has been made remain outside the circle. This indicates a truth that must be emphasized, namely the supreme importance of earthly life for the individual human being. If we had no earthly lives, we would be unable to form links with human souls in the spiritual world. The links are formed karmically on earth and then continue between death and a new birth. Those who can see into the spiritual world perceive how the dead gradually make more and more links, all of which are the outcome of karmic connections formed on earth. Just as we may say that everything the dead do, even simple movements, cause pleasure or pain in the environment of the first kingdom they encounter, the animal kingdom, so we may say that everything that is experienced in the human realm and the other world is much more intimately connected with the life of soul. When the dead become acquainted with a soul, they come to know it as if they themselves were within it. After death, knowledge of other souls is as intimate as knowledge here on earth is of our own finger, head, or ear. We feel ourselves within the other soul. The connection is much more intimate than it can ever be on earth. Human souls, between death and a new birth, enjoy two basic community experiences. They are either within other souls or outside them. Even in the case of souls already known, the dead are sometimes within and sometimes outside them. Meeting a soul consists in feeling at one with it, being within it. To be outside it means that it is not noticed, that the other soul does not become aware of it. If we look at an object here on earth, we perceive it. If we look away from it, we no longer perceive it. In the other world, when we are able to turn our attention to other souls, we are actually within them. But when we are not in a position to do so, we are outside them. What I have said gives an indication of the fundamental form of the soul's communion with other souls during the period between death and a new birth. In the same way, the human being is also within or outside the beings of the hierarchies, the angeloi, archangeloi, and so on. The higher the kingdoms, the more intensely one feels bound to them after death. One feels as though they were bearing one, sustaining one with great power. The archangeloi are a mightier support than the angeloi, the archai mightier than the archangeloi, and so on. People today still find it difficult to acquire knowledge of the spiritual world. But the difficulties would soon be resolved if a little more trouble were taken to become acquainted with its secrets. There are two approaches. One leads to complete certainty of the eternal in one's own being. This knowledge that in human nature there is an eternal core of being that passes through birth and death, remote as it is to the modern mind, is comparatively easy to attain. And it will certainly be attained by those who have enough perseverance along the path described in my book, How to Know Higher Worlds, and in other writings. It is attained by treading the path I have described there. That is one approach to knowledge of the spiritual world. The other is through what may be called direct exchange with beings of the spiritual world. I shall now speak of the exchange that is possible between those still living on earth and the so-called dead. Such communication is most certainly possible, but it presents greater difficulties than the first form of knowledge, which is easy to attain. Actual exchange with an individual who has died is possible but difficult because it demands scrupulous vigilance by the one who seeks to establish it. Control and discipline are necessary for this kind of communication with the spiritual world because it is connected with a very important law. Impulses recognized as lower impulses in people on the earth are, from the spiritual side, higher life. It may therefore easily happen that a human being who has not achieved true control of the self can experience the rising of lower impulses as the result of direct exchange with the dead. When we make contact with the spiritual world in the general sense, when we acquire knowledge about our own immortality as beings of soul and spirit, there can be no question of the ingress of anything impure. But when it is a matter of contact with individuals who have died, the relation with the individual dead, strange as it seems, is always a relation with the blood and nervous system. The dead enter those impulses that live themselves out in the system of blood and nerves. In this way, lower impulses may be aroused. Naturally, this is a danger only for those who have not purified their nature through discipline and control. This must be said, for it is why communication with the dead is forbidden in the Old Testament. Such exchange is not sinful when it happens in the right way. The methods of modern spiritualism must, of course, be avoided. When the communication is of a spiritual nature, it is not sinful. But if it is not accompanied by pure thoughts, it can easily lead to the stimulation of lower passions. It is not the dead who arouse these passions, but rather the element in which the dead live. Consider this. The basic element in which the dead live is what we feel here as animal in quality and nature. The kingdom where the dead live can therefore easily be changed when it enters us. What is higher life in the other world can become lower impulses when it is within us on earth. It is very important to remember this. It must be emphasized here when we are speaking of communication between the living and the so-called dead. This is an occult fact. We shall find that it is precisely when we are speaking about such communication that the spiritual world can be described as it really is. For such experiences reveal that the spiritual world is completely different from the physical world. To begin with, I will tell you something that may seem to have no meaning for you, as long as you have not developed faculties of clairvoyance. But if you think it over, you will realize that it concerns you closely. Those who are able to commune with the dead as the result of developed clairvoyance realize why it is so difficult for human beings to know anything about the dead through direct perception. Strange as it may seem, the whole form of exchange to which we are accustomed in the physical world has to be reversed when communication is established between the earth and the dead. In the physical world, when we speak to a human being from physical body to physical body, we know that the words come from ourselves. When the other person speaks to us, we know that the words come from him or her. The whole relationship is reversed when we are speaking with one who has died. The expression, quote, "when we are speaking," unquote, can truthfully be used, but the relationship is reversed. When we put a question to the dead or say something to someone who has died, what we say comes from the dead person, comes to us from the dead. That soul inspires our soul what we ask it. Let me say that again. That soul inspires into our soul what we ask it, what we say. And when the one who has died answers us or says something to us, this comes out of our own soul. It is a process human beings in the physical world are quite unfamiliar with. We feel that what we say comes out of our own being. In order to establish communication with those who have died, we must adapt ourselves to hear from them what we ourselves say, and to receive from our own soul what they answer. Abstractly described, the nature of the process is easy to grasp, but it is very difficult to become accustomed to the total reversal of the familiar form of communication. The dead are always there, always among us and around us, and the fact that they are not perceived is largely due to lack of understanding of this reversed form of communication. On the physical plane, we think that when anything comes out of our soul, it comes from us. We are far from being able to pay intimate enough attention to whether it is not, after all, perhaps being inspired into us from the spiritual environment. We prefer to connect it with experiences familiar to us on the physical plane, where something that comes to us from the environment is at once ascribed to the other person. This is the greatest error when it is a matter of communication with the dead. I have spoken of one of the fundamental principles of communication between the so-called living and the so-called dead. If this example helps you to realize only one thing, that conditions are entirely reversed in the spiritual world, then you will have grasped a very significant concept, one constantly needed by those who aspire to become conscious of the spiritual world. The concept is extremely difficult to apply in actual individual cases. For instance, to understand even the physical world, permeated as it is, with the spiritual, it is essential to grasp this idea of complete reversal. And because modern science fails to grasp it, it is altogether unknown to general consciousness. That is why there is today no spiritual understanding of the physical world. One experiences this even with people who try very hard, indeed, to comprehend the world, and one is often obliged simply to accept the situation and leave it at that. Some years ago I was speaking to a large number of friends at a meeting in Berlin about the human physical organism, with special reference to some of Goethe's ideas. I tried to explain how the physical structure of the head can only be rightly understood when it is conceived as a complete transformation of the other part of the organism. Footnote, see also Rudolf Steiner, Foundations of Human Experience, Lecture 10, Hudson, New York, Anthroposophic Press, 1997. No one was able to understand at all that a bone in the arm would have to be turned inside out like a glove in order to produce a skull bone from it. It is a difficult concept, but one cannot really understand anatomy without such pictures. I mention this only parenthetically. What I have said today about communication with the dead is easier to understand. What I have described to you is going on all the time. All of you sitting here now are in constant communication with the dead, only ordinary consciousness knows nothing of it because it lies in the subconscious. Clairvoyant consciousness does not evoke anything new into being. It merely brings up into consciousness what is present all the time in the spiritual world. All of you are in constant exchange with the dead. We shall now consider how this exchange takes place in individual cases. When someone has died and we are left behind, we may ask, how do I approach the one who has died, so that he or she is aware of me? How do they come near me again so that I can live in them? These questions may well be asked, but they cannot be answered if we have recourse only to concepts familiar on the physical plane. On the physical plane, ordinary consciousness functions only from the time of waking until the time of falling asleep. But the other part of consciousness, the one that remains dim in ordinary life, between falling asleep and waking, is just as important. When human beings are asleep, they are not, properly speaking, unconscious. Consciousness is merely so dim that they experience nothing. But the whole human being, awake and asleep, must be considered when we study the connections of human beings with the spiritual world. Think of your own biography. You reflect upon the course of your life, but this reflection always has interruptions. You describe only what has happened in your waking hours. Life is punctuated, waking and sleeping, sleeping and waking. You are also there while you sleep. When you study the whole human being, both waking life and sleeping life must be taken into consideration. A third thing must also be kept in mind regarding our exchange with the spiritual world. Besides waking life and sleeping life, there is a third state, even more important for exchange with the spiritual world than the first two, the state connected with the act of waking up and the act of going to sleep. This third state lasts only a few brief seconds, for we immediately pass on into other conditions. However, if we develop a delicate sensitivity for these moments of waking and going to sleep, we shall find that they shed great light on the spiritual world. Although such customs are gradually disappearing, when we who are today older were still young, people in remote country places were wont to say that when you wake from sleep, it is not good to go immediately to a window where the light is streaming through. You should stay in the dark for a while. Country folk used to have some knowledge about communication with the spiritual world, and they preferred not to come right into the bright daylight at the moment of waking, but to remain inwardly collected in order to preserve something of what sweeps with such power through the human soul at that moment. The sudden brightness of daylight is disturbing. In cities, of course, we can hardly avoid being disturbed. There we are disturbed not only by the daylight, but also, even before waking, by the noise from the streets, the clanging of streetcar bells, and so forth. The whole of civilized life seems to conspire to hinder our communication with the spiritual world. This is not said to decry material civilization, but we must remember the facts. The spiritual world approaches us powerfully again at the moment of going to sleep, but we fall asleep immediately and lose consciousness of what has passed through the soul. Exceptions do, of course, occur. These moments of waking and of going to sleep are of the utmost significance for communication with the so-called dead, as well as with other spiritual beings of the higher worlds. To understand what I have to say about this, however, you must familiarize yourselves with an idea that is not easy to apply on the physical plane and is therefore practically unknown. It is this: spiritually, what is past has not really vanished, but is still there. In physical life, people have this conception only in regard to space. If you stand in front of a tree and then go away and come back later to look at it, the tree has not disappeared, it is still there. The same is true for time in the spiritual world. If you experience something at one moment, it has passed away in the next as far as physical consciousness is concerned. Spiritually conceived, however, it has not passed away. You can look back at it just as you looked back at the tree. Richard Wagner showed his knowledge of this in the remarkable words he put into his Parsifal, "Time here becomes space," quote-unquote, "time here becomes space." It is an occult fact that in the spiritual world there are distances that do not come to expression on the physical plane. That an event is past simply means that it is farther away from us. I beg you to remember this. For human beings on earth in the physical body, the moment of going to sleep is past when the moment of waking arrives. In the spiritual world, however, the moment of falling asleep has not gone. We are only a little farther distant from it at the moment of waking. We encounter our dead at the moment of going to sleep and again at the moment of waking. Parenthesis, as I said, this is happening all the time, only it usually remains in the subconscious. As far as physical consciousness is concerned, these are two quite different moments in time, but for spiritual consciousness, the one is only a little farther distant from the other. I want you to remember this in connection with what I am now going to say, otherwise you may find it difficult to understand. As I told you, the moments of waking and going to sleep are particularly important for communication with those who have died. Through the whole of our life, there are no such moments when we do not come into relation with the dead. The moment of going to sleep is especially favorable for us to turn to the dead. Suppose we want to ask the dead something. We can carry it in our soul, holding it until the moment of going to sleep, for that is the time to bring our questions to the dead. Other opportunities exist, but this moment is the most favorable. When, for instance, we read to the dead, we certainly draw near to them, but for direct communication it is best of all if we put our questions to them at the moment of going to sleep. On the other hand, the moment of waking is the most favorable for receiving what the dead have to communicate to us. And again, there is no one, did people but know it, who at the moment of waking does not bring with them countless tidings from the dead. In the subconscious region of the soul, we are always speaking with the dead. At the moment of going to sleep, we put our questions to them. We say to them what, in the depths of the soul, we have to say. At the moment of waking, the dead speak to us, give us the answers. But we must realize that these are only two different points, and that, in the higher sense, these things that happen at different times for us are really simultaneous, just as on the physical plane two places are there simultaneously. Some factors in life are favorable for exchange with the dead, others less so. We may therefore ask, what can really help us to establish conversation with the dead? The manner of our conversation cannot be the same as it is with those who are alive, for the dead neither hear nor take in this kind of speech. There is no question of being able to chatter with one who has died as we chatter with another at tea or in cafes. What makes it possible to put questions to the dead or to communicate something to them is that we unite the life of feeling with our thoughts and ideas. Suppose a person has passed through the gate of death and you want your subconscious to communicate something to him or her in the evening. It need not be communicated consciously. You can prepare it at some time during the day. Then if you go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, having prepared it, say, at noon, it passes over to the dead when you go to sleep. The question must, however, be put in a particular way. It must not merely be a thought or an idea, but must be imbued with feeling and with will. Your relationship with the dead must be one of the heart, of inner interest. You must remind yourself of your love for the person when he or she was alive and address yourself to that soul with real warmth of heart, not abstractly. This feeling can take such firm root in the soul that in the evening, at the moment of going to sleep, it becomes a question to the dead without your knowing it. Or you may try to realize vividly the nature of your particular interest in the one who has died. Think about your shared experiences. Visualize actual moments when you were together, and then ask yourself, what was it about the person that attracted me, that particularly interested me? When was it that I was so deeply impressed, liked what he or she said, found it helpful and valuable? If you remind yourself of moments when you were strongly connected with the dead and were deeply interested in them, and then turn this into a desire to speak to them, to say something, if you develop the feeling with purity of heart and let the question arise out of the interest you took in them, then the question or the communication remains in your soul, and when you go to sleep it passes over to the dead. Ordinary consciousness, as a rule, will know little of what is happening, because sleep ensues immediately. But what has thus passed over often remains present in dreams. In the case of most dreams we have of the dead, in actual content, they are misleading. All that happens is that we interpret them incorrectly. We interpret them as messages from the dead, whereas they are nothing but the echoing of the questions or communications we ourselves have directed to the dead. We should not think that the dead are saying something to us in our dream, but should rather see in the dream something that goes out from our own soul to the dead. The dream is the echo of this. If we were sufficiently developed to be conscious of our question or communication to the dead at the moment of going to sleep, it would seem to us as though the dead themselves were speaking. Hence the echo in the dream seems as if it were a message from them. In reality, it comes from ourselves. This becomes intelligible only when we understand the nature of clairvoyant connection with the dead. What the dead seem to say to us is really what we are saying to them. The moment of waking is especially favorable for the dead to approach us. At the moment of waking, a great deal comes from the dead to every human being. A great deal of what we undertake in life is really inspired into us by the dead or by beings of the higher hierarchies, although we attribute it to ourselves, imagining that it comes from our own soul. The life of day draws near. The moment of waking passes quickly by, and we seldom pay heed to the intimate indications that arise out of our soul. And when we do, we are vain enough to attribute them to ourselves. Yet in all this, and in much else that comes out of our own soul, there lives what the dead have to say to us. It is indeed so. What the dead say to us seems to arise out of our own soul. If people knew what life truly is, this knowledge would engender a feeling of reverence and piety toward the spiritual world where we are always living, together with the dead with whom we are connected. We should realize that in much of what we do, the dead are working. The knowledge that around us, like the very air we breathe, there is a spiritual world, that the dead are around us, only we are not able to perceive them, this knowledge must be unfolded in spiritual science, not as theory, but so that it permeates the soul as inner life. The dead speak to us inwardly, but we interpret our own inner life incorrectly. If we understood it aright, we would know that in our inmost being we are united with the souls of the so-called dead. Now, whether a soul passes through the gate of death in relatively early years or later in life makes a great difference. The death of young children who have loved us is a very different thing from the death of people older than ourselves. Experience of the spiritual world shows that the secret of communion with children who have died can be expressed by saying that in the spiritual sense we do not lose them. They remain with us. When children die in early life, they continue to be with us, spiritually with us. I would like to give this to you as a theme for meditation. When little children die, they are not lost to us. We do not lose them. They stay with us spiritually. The opposite may be said of older people who die. Those who are older do not lose us. We do not lose little children. Elderly people do not lose us. When elderly people die, they are strongly drawn to the spiritual world. But this also gives them the power to work into the physical world so that it is easier for them to approach us. True, they withdraw much farther from the physical world than do children who remain near us, but they are endowed with higher faculties of perception than children who die young. Knowledge of different souls in the spiritual world reveals that those who died in old age are able to enter easily into souls on earth. They do not lose the souls on earth. And we do not lose little children, for they remain more or less within the sphere of earthly humanity. The meaning of the difference can also be considered in another respect. We do not always have sufficient insight into the experiences of the soul on the physical plane. When friends die, we mourn and feel pain. I have often said that it is not the task of anthroposophy to offer people shallow consolation for their pain or try to talk them out of their sorrow when good friends pass away. One should grow strong enough to bear sorrow and not allow oneself to be talked out of it. But people do not distinguish whether the sorrow is caused by the death of a child or of one who is elderly. Spiritually perceived, there is a very great difference. When little children have died, the pain of those who remain behind is really a kind of compassion. No matter whether the children were their own or others, they loved. Children remain with us, and because we have been united with them, they convey their pain to our souls. We feel their pain, that they would still be here. Their pain is eased when we bear it with them. The child feels in us, shares its feeling with us, and it is good that it should be so. The pain is thereby ameliorated. On the other hand, the pain we feel at the death of elderly people, whether relatives or friends, can be called egotistical pain. Elderly persons who have died do not lose us, and the feeling they have is therefore different from the feeling present in a child. Those who die in later life do not lose us. We, here in life, feel that we have lost them. The pain is therefore ours. It is egotistical pain. We do not share their feeling as we do in the case of children. We feel the pain for ourselves. A clear distinction can therefore be made between these two forms of pain: egotistical pain in connection with the elderly, pain fraught with compassion in connection with children. Children live on in us, and we actually feel what they feel. In reality, our own soul mourns only for those who die in the later years of their life. Something like this can show us the immense significance of knowledge of the spiritual world. For you see, the divine service for the dead can be adapted in accordance with these truths. In the case of a child who has died, it will not be altogether appropriate to emphasize the individual aspect. Because the child lives on in us and remains with us, the service of remembrance should take a more universal form, giving the child who is still near us something that is wide and universal. Therefore, in the case of a child, a simple ceremony in the service is preferable to a special funeral oration. The Catholic ritual is better here in one case, the Protestant in the other. The Catholic service includes no funeral oration, but consists in ceremony, in ritual. It is general, universal, alike for all. And what can be alike for all is especially good for children. But in the case of one who has died in later years, the individual aspect is more important. The best funeral service here will be one in which the life of the individual is remembered. The Protestant service, with the oration referring to the life of the one who has died, will have great significance for the soul. The Catholic ritual will mean less in such a case. The same distinction holds good for all our thought about those who have died. It is best for children when we induce a mood of feeling connected with them. We try to turn our thoughts to them, and these thoughts will draw near to them when we sleep. Such thoughts may be of a more general kind, ones, for example, that could be directed to all those who have passed through the gate of death. In the case of elderly people, we must direct our thoughts to remembrance of them as individuals, thinking about their life on earth and experiences we shared with them. To establish the right communication with older people, it is very important to visualize them as they actually were, to make their being come to life in ourselves, not only by remembering things they said that meant a great deal to us, but by thinking of what they were as individuals and what their value was for the world. If we make these things inwardly alive, they will enable us to come into connection with an older person who has died and to have the right thoughts of remembrance. So you see, for the unfolding of true piety, it is important to know what attitude should be taken toward those who have died in childhood and to those who have died in the later years of life. Just think what it means at the present time, when so many human beings are dying comparatively early, to be able to say to oneself, they are really always present, they are not lost to the world. Parenthesis, I have spoken of this from other points of view, for such matters must always be considered from different angles. Parenthesis. If we succeed in becoming conscious of the spiritual world, one realization at least will light up in us out of the deep sorrow with which the present days are fraught. Because those who die young remain with us, a living spiritual life can arise through communion with the dead. A living spiritual life can and will arise, if only materialism is not allowed to become so strong that Ahriman is able to stretch out his claws and gain the victory over all human powers. Many people may say, speaking purely of conditions on the physical plane, that what I have been indicating here seems very remote. They would prefer to be told definitely what they can do in the morning and evening to bring themselves into a right relation with the spiritual world. But this is not quite correct thinking. Where the spiritual world is concerned, the first essential is that we should develop thoughts about it. And even if it seems as though the dead are far away, while immediate life is close at hand, the very fact that we have such thoughts and that we allow our minds to dwell on things seemingly remote from external life uplifts the soul, gives it spiritual strength and spiritual nourishment. Do not therefore be afraid of thinking these thoughts through again and again, continually bringing them to new life within the soul. There is nothing more important for life, even for material life, than the strong and sure realization of communion with the spiritual world. If modern people had not lost their relationship with spiritual things to such an extent, these grave times would not have come upon us. Only a very few today have insight into this connection, although it will certainly be recognized in the future. People think nowadays that when human beings pass through the gate of death, their activity ceases as far as the physical world is concerned, but indeed it is not so. There is a living and perpetual exchange between the so-called dead and the so-called living. Those who have passed through the gate of death have not ceased to be present. It is only that our eyes have ceased to see them. They are there in very truth. Our thoughts, our feelings, our impulses of will are all connected with the dead. The words of the gospel hold good for the dead as well. Quote, "The kingdom of the spirit cometh not with observation," unquote, that is to say, external observation. Quote, neither shall they say, lo here, lo there, for behold, the kingdom of the Spirit is within you. Unquote. We should not seek the dead through externalities, but become conscious that they are always present. All historical life, all social life, all ethical life proceeds by virtue of cooperation between the so-called living and the so-called dead. The whole of our being can be infinitely strengthened when we are not only conscious of our firm stand here in the physical world, but are also filled with the inner realization of being able to say of the dead whom we have loved, they are with us, they are in our midst. This, too, is part of a true knowledge and understanding of the spiritual world that must, as it were, be woven together from many different threads. We cannot say that we know the spiritual world until the way we think and speak about it comes from that world itself. The dead are in our midst. These words in themselves are an affirmation of the spiritual world. Only the spiritual world itself can awaken within us the consciousness that in very truth the dead are with us. The end of Lecture 8.